This is Best.
You're listening to Burst Live 2004. Good afternoon, you're listening to Burst 2004, live from the studio at University Bournemouth. With me today we have...
Phil Jones, very pleased to meet you.
And...
Francisco Henning.
And...
Lotus from Taipei.
And I'm Charlie C. Today's show is going to consist of features, music, chat, lots of bits and bobs. So, let's get away and... play of a song.
Sing with me. That is where I'm at. Hoop with me. From that muddy face, bloody hand, make it weak dance on our floor. From that, from the dark, light a fire, in the rain we raise our hair.
Okay, this is the news review from the fantastic newspaper that is The Sun today. There's one which has a headline, Bride Gets 27 Months for Bigamy. Now, I wasn't aware that bigamy was actually a punishable offence. I thought it was just something you sort out yourself. I didn't think you could actually be sent to jail for it. But it says, bogus bride Karen Kennedy was jailed for 27 months yesterday on two counts of bigamy. Married Kennedy, 44, wed a chef and a waiter at a curry house she worked at in Herne Bay, Kent, so they could stay together after entering the UK illegally. She did it to please her lover, restaurant boss Bajlu Khan. I really apologise for the pronunciation there. Canterbury Crown Court was told. Her real hubby, Jim, 62, knew of the scam and was even a witness at the wedding. Khan, 42, was jailed for 2 years for aiding and abetting.
It's a bit strange.
Seems a bit funny. Francisco, what have you got?
Well, I got here that a bear with a straw head was captured yesterday on Memorial Hospital in Rocky Mountains, Virginia, US. He went into this hospital and police got to shoot him dead. because he was walking around looking for some pretty nurses, I think.
Seems a bit harsh, shooting him.
Yeah, it is.
Sure, they've got tranquilizers or something they could deal with.
Well, you know, people in US get a little bit freak out.
Trigger happy. Yeah.
Mind you, if a bear walked into a hospital in England, he'd be waiting for ages, wouldn't he?
Very true.
But any sort of...
He'd probably die of natural causes before he got...
Sweeping generalisation about NHS. Yes.
Anyway, Laura, what have you got?
Oh, well, a commuter who left his car on a level crossing because the train was not going to stop was spared jail yesterday. Simon Taylor, 47, of Polegate, East Sussex. I'm not really sure about the place, sorry. East Sussex got 80 hours community service at Hove Crown Court. It must pay £350 compensation and costs.
You see, I don't understand how he didn't go to jail.
Well, he parked his car on a level crossing because the train wouldn't stop for him.
Well, it's a bit like King Canute wanting the tide to just not come in again. It just seems a bit pointless, really.
He must have been really, really annoyed.
But do you know what would cheer him up? The news that a crime talk cop's home is burgled. Really bad headline, I apologise for that, but apparently a police chief's home was burgled while he was giving a talk on crime prevention. Shouldn't really laugh, but it is funny. Superintendent Pete West had to dash from the meeting and drive home to comfort his wife Pauline. Apparently he was giving a talk about how to stop burglars getting into houses, etc., and that was what happened. They got into his house.
Fantastic.
Unfortunate for him.
Well, we've got some more music and features and chat coming up. If at any point you want to email the studio, it is studio@burst.co.uk and the phone number is...
01202 595 762. Oh, yeah. It all falls down. This is the real one, baby. I'm telling you, Chi-Town stand up. Southside, we gon' set this party off right. West side, we gon' set this party off right. Man, I promise. She's so self-conscious, she has no idea what she's doing in college. That major that she majored in don't make no money, but she won't drop out. Her parents are looking at her funny. Now, tell me that ain't insecure. The concept of school seems so secure. Sophomore 3 years, ain't picked a career. She like, fuck it, I'll just stay down her and do it. Cause that's enough money to buy her a few pairs of new airs. Cause her baby daddy don't really care. She's so precious, with the peer pressure. Couldn't afford a car, so she named her daughter Alexi. Yeah, it's so long that it looked like weave. Then she cut it all off, now she look like Eve. And she be dealing with some issues that you can't believe. Single black female addicted to retail as well. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, man, I promise. I'm so self-conscious. That's why you always see me with at least one of my watches. Rollies and Poshes that drove me crazy. I can't even pronounce nothing past that for safety. Then I spent $400 on this, just to be like, nigga, you ain't up on this. And I can't even go to the grocery store without some ones that's clean and a shirt with a team. Scene, we live in the American dream. The people highest up got the lowest self-esteem. The prettiest people do the ugliest things. For the road to riches and diamond rings. Shine because they hate us, floss because they the greatest. We trying to buy back our 40 acres. And for that paper, look how low we are stoop. Even if you in a band, you still a nigga. Come on, come on. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, I say fuck the police, that's how I treat them. We buy our way out of jail, but we can't buy freedom. We'll buy a lot of clothes, but we don't really need them. Things we buy to cover up what's inside. Cause they made us hate ourselves and love their wealth. That's why shorty's hollering where the ball is at. Drug dealer by Jordan, crack kid by crack. And the white man get paid off for all of that. But I ain't even gonna act totally other than that. Cause fuck it, I went to Jacob with 25,000 before I had a house and I do it again. Cause I wanna be on 106 and far, wishing a band. I wanna act ballerific like it's all terrific. I got a couple past due bills, I won't get specific. I got a problem with spending before I get it. We all self-conscious, I'm just the first to admit. Yeah, come on, come on. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, Southside, Southside, we gon' set this party off right.
This is Best.
Like what you're hearing? Contact us on studio@burst.co.uk.
And if you want to call, dial 01202 595762.
Fantastic. So please call in. Want as many callers as possible. Today is a very special day. Guys, I'd just like to point out, if on this day this very special thing didn't happen, we would literally be covered in poo everywhere. Today, in 1596, Sir John Harrington invented the water closet. Yay!
Woo! Thank you.
So, today's theme throughout the show is toilets, basically. I went off yesterday and made a little feature about toilets. Here it is.
Good afternoon, web listeners. This is Charlie C reporting from Bournemouth Town Centre with my glamorous assistant, Danielle.
Hello.
We are in search of Bournemouth's best bog on the anniversary that the water closet was invented. So we're going to take you around the town centre and find the nicest toilets in Bournemouth. Let's go. Hi listeners, first toilet stop, we're in the department store in the centre of Bournemouth, which is Debenhams. I'm sat in one of the cubicles, quite a lot of room, which is good. The wall looks like it's falling down to the right hand side of me. Lots of toilet paper, nothing too special about this toilet, but it's clean at least, and there's a walnut veneer style door. When you enter the toilet, there's a very narrow corridor, which could be quite off-putting if you were claustrophobic. But the sink and cleaning facilities are nice and clean, and they also advertise such things as Clinique and other delights. So that's toilet number one. Out of 10, I'd say about 6. Hello, listeners. Toilet number 2 now. I'm sat in one of the toilets in Wetherspoons, the Moon Inn Square, in Bournemouth Town Centre. How can I describe this to you? Now, these are a big chain of pub, and to be honest, the toilets are quite dull. Not very exciting. Not that you need to be enthusiastic to go to the toilet, but it's nice to have something different. I'll describe them to you. There's green tiles, there's a door that doesn't lock properly, and imagine the scenario, if you will. You're on the toilet and someone barges in, and they're not even that big, so they'd probably barge in and knock you out in one foul swoop with your trousers around your ankles, which is all nice. And it's a funny shape as well, it's a bit offset, and the exit door isn't signposted exit, so you end up walking into another toilet where someone sat on the toilet. So it's a circle of doom in toilet land, to be fair. On to the next. Hi, listeners. We are in the Consortium toilet. This is my particular favourite. I'm sat in the cubicle. Around the middle of the walls, there's lovely little coloured mosaic tiles, even. And check this out for toilet decoration. You come in and the seat is clear and it's got jelly beans in. How fantastic. It's so cool. Obviously, you would not want to eat the jelly beans. No matter how drunk you were, you know, if you had a sledgehammer with you to smash up the toilet seat. But you're not going to. I do love these toilets. They're really funky, really cool. Quite a lot of room. There's always toilet paper here, which is nice. And they've got sink sensors, so you just wave your hand in front of the sink and the water magically disperses from the fountain-style taps. I'm in Yates's now, eating chocolate and sitting on the toilet, as you do. Yates's has got a massive, massive toilet, and it's sort of in the wooden style theme of chain pubs. Very nice, long sinks, big mirrors. We love it. And whenever I go to the toilet in Yates's, there's always, always loads of girls. Always. But I'm sure we'll talk about that later. So yeah, Yates's is, I'd give it 9 out of 10. Last stop, university toilets. Can't really say much about them. They are very dull and dreary, and I wouldn't even bother. I'd go in a bush somewhere. Hello there. Could I ask you a question? Where, could you tell me where Bournemouth's best bog is, in your opinion?
Bournemouth's best bog? No, not really. I haven't really come across one that's absolutely amazing. I like clean toilets. And I would say that most of the chain pubs tend to be...
It's lucky we're in a toilet. Okay, can you tell me what makes a good toilet?
A toilet has to be clean, and plenty of toilets, i.e. you can't just have two cubicles and a queue full of, like, half-pissed girls falling against a wall. So it's always good to have loads of toilet paper. A toilet attendant can come in quite handy, because then, you know, you can always, like, rob a hairbrush or some perfume or something to pretty yourself up. Because you do realise that the more alcohol you have later in the night, the more likely that you're going to wake up looking like a panda beside some random bloke. So it's good to be prepared.
Lovely. Thank you, toilets in Bournemouth. You help us in our quest for a mate.
This is...
So, toilets.
Absolutely. What you're saying about Bournemouth toilets being dull, well, Bournemouth University ones, is absolutely true. I completely agree with that, because I went to the toilet recently, and all it had on there as graffiti...
Recently?
Recently, yeah. I mean, not in the last few days, obviously, you know. I'm not crazy. but all it said was somebody wanted to have carnal knowledge of a porpoise. That's a bit dull. I think they should scrap the Times Literary Supplement idea of grading universities on actual, like, academic excellence and things, and they should just have the interesting toilets. Because in Leeds, they've got toilets where they've got, on the bog roll dispenser, someone's written, history of art degrees, please take one. And that's quite good. So it's sort of quite complex kind of graffiti there.
Yeah, clever.
And
clever
toilet tennis. They've got look left on one wall, look right on the other, so you're like, huh? Where'd you look?
That's quite clever.
Yes, that's
I wouldn't have thought of that, put it that way. It's a funny, I mean, I can't imagine in medieval times they'd be out in ye old pubber and the girls are like, you're going to come to the toilet with me? Let's go and talk about boys and scream lots.
Probably not, no. I think they've probably just gone into the woods.
Yeah.
I hear the Pope goes in the woods. Oh no, that's bears.
No, bears are Catholic. But, yeah, there's a whole, what could you call it, culture, toilet culture, especially in Britain, definitely. The whole thing about girls going into the toilets together and gossiping, and on a night out, you know it's a good night out because there's always a girl crying in the toilets, howling, absolutely howling.
There's definitely an etiquette to it as well.
What about boys' toilets? Because I asked someone the other day, what do you just go in and stare straight ahead, or do you have a good look around?
That's the general rule. There always has to be at least one imaginary person in between you and the person at the next bog. You can't go to the one next to someone. You have to pick one away from someone.
Right.
And you're not allowed to talk. Now, that's one of my bugbears. When you go into a toilet and someone walks in and they try and start a conversation with you, and you're just thinking, stop talking, you're in the toilet. We're in the toilet, we've got our Johnsons out, we're peeing, we don't talk. It's not something you do.
See, that's where men and women differ, because that's all you ever hear in the toilet, and if no one talks to you, it's a bit rude.
But you don't go in the same cubicle, do you? It's not like...
Sometimes you do, if you're absolutely hammered. You're not with strangers, you're not like, come in the toilet with your mates, you do. No, but you do end up talking to people.
And there's another rule as well about gents' toilets, which is the person going in has priority when it comes to the door because they're in dire need. They need to go to the toilet. The person's finished, they can wait, sort of thing.
Right.
It's a one-way system.
I see. It's a dark underworld of men's toilets,
oh,
isn't
yes.
it? Well, let's see what Alan has to say.
Oh, cook a cat.
Right. This is Everlast.
They call me White Devil, Black Jesus, heaven closing, hell freezing, egos tripping, scripts keep flipping, bloods keep blooding, crips keep ripping, time keeps slipping, and I keep falling, and I can't see but I hear them calling, ballers balling, players playing, haters fighting, righteous praying, don't bring it out and keep making, whipping keep taking, shook ones keep shaking, no time for faking, not mean I ain't chopping no pies, just rising like
Best.
I wanna breathe now.
Like what you're hearing? Contact us on studio@burst.co.uk.
Okay, so if you've been following Euro 2004, you won't fail to have noticed that England played yesterday and they beat Switzerland 3-0.
Hurrah!
Hooray! Woo! But more importantly, France sort of didn't play very well against Croatia and they drew 2-2.
I got to say, Phil, I disagree with you. It was not that France played not very well, it was that Croatia raised their level. So I think England got to be a little bit more cautious about the next game against Croatia and they'll give it like for granted. And
Can I just ask a question from a girl's point of view who knows nothing about football? And I'm sure there's lots of people cringing at the moment.
Please
Someone
do.
Was trying to tell me last night that if France won the game against Croatia, then that puts us above them. No.
That's definitely a girl's perspective.
Right, I'm just going to go.
It might have put us in a better position, though. I think that might be what they were trying to say, because if we come second in the group rather than first, then we end up with an easier path through to the finals, perhaps.
Oh, right.
So, but all the same, it's nice to win.
Yeah, and Croatia would have had to be really bad, surely.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, England, I think, have had a little slip-up against France, and this is it. Now, I think, it's all the way to the finals, I'm fairly sure.
As an objective football fan, I got to say that England got it very easy since one of the guys from Switzerland was with a red card. Before the red card, the game got another view. I mean, it was, like, very even. England was just able to score once. Since the Swiss guy went out, they got it easy, and it's obvious. If you get one more player, you should deliver at least one more goal.
It's a fair point. The referee was very, very annoying. He kept intervening all the time, and I don't think it was a sending off, really.
Was this blonde bloke that everyone's talking about?
Yeah.
Frisch.
Yeah.
What's his name, Frisk? Frisk?
Anders Frisk.
Yeah.
Was it Anders Frisk? I don't think it was.
It was a guy from Russia.
Doesn't sound like a Russian name to me.
Frisk.
Anders Friskovic. I don't know. Anyway, yes. So, what do you make of the whole English patriotism thing, Francisco?
What do you make of all the flags?
Yeah, flags
strapped
everywhere.
To people's cars.
It seems to be lovely to see all over the place and the cars with the little flags and not the blue one, but the white one. I'm not very...
Yeah, the real English. Yeah. I've noticed in Bournemouth, definitely, they really push the boat out when it comes to being sort of patriotic.
Yeah,
definitely.
I've seen a lot of flags around here, much more than in Coventry. It seems a bit strange, because normally you're used to patriotism being seen as a sort of anti-foreigner thing, because of the 80s and the football riots and hooliganism. I mean, I say the 80s, but hooliganism still
exists.
Yeah, it seems to have got... It started to become okay to be patriotic and say that you were quite proud of being English.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you get the loutish behaviour in Portugal and it's suddenly a bit weird again to be English, and it's a bit... You feel a bit ashamed.
But then it's not all down to football about being English. I mean, what other things are we good at? Cricket.
Cricket, complaining
rugby.
About the weather.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, rugby we're not so good at. If anyone watched the New Zealand match the other day, we got absolutely battered, 36-3 or something.
Well, we're usually quite good at rugby.
Normally, but not...
Better at rugby than we are football, would you say?
I'd say in general. Yeah, it's just that we were playing some really good opponents and New Zealand are far too good for us. Anyway, you got a piece of newspaper there, Francisco.
Yeah, I think I got something here that... Why does Britain produce such a violent lotus? And it says here that British like a fight, and I got to agree with that. And yeah, we can see that in Portugal with the shame behavior of the British fans. It's unfair to say that all the fans behave that way, but you can really see that it's not a small number when they got nasty and got to be something. And I think it's related also with the bad drinking behavior.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our British culture of binge drinking. Binge drinking.
I've been drinking.
Drinking out of bins. Binge drinking, I'm sorry. Binge drinking.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people understated the extent of the violence, but it looked pretty bad to me on the television. And I saw one bit where one of the Portuguese policemen was about to bat on someone on the ground, and his superior officer grabbed his baton off him. But to be honest, and a friend of mine said this yesterday, I don't see the problem with Portuguese police defending themselves. And if someone tried to attack me, I don't see why I shouldn't attack back, you know?
True.
It's their job, and it's like natural response from something. Somebody is attacking you, you get to defend yourself. And also, you get to think about is their responsibility to keep the order in the city or in the town. And it was amazing, the footage of the fans hitting the small pub of the Portuguese, and they were scared inside the pub. It was awful.
It did look terrible, I have to say. And it's annoying when a small group of louts hijacks the national flag as well, because everyone seems to be wearing the England flags. And I prepared a small piece about the flag of St. George and the origins of St. George and his legends.
Let's have a look.
Which I'm sure Charlie will play any time now. Without seeing the cross of St. George flying from the roofs of cars and on people's clothes. But how much do we really know about St. George, the patron saint of England? The legend of St. George and the Dragon is quite well known to us today. It came down to us in a book called The Legend Aurea of James de Forain, which was translated by William Caxton. In it, we're told that St. George was a Christian knight, and that he was born in Cappadocia, which was modern-day Turkey. It chanced, however, that he was riding one day in the province of Libya, and there he came upon a city called Cyllene, near which was a marshy swamp. In this lived a dragon, which envenomed all the country. The people had mustered together to attack and kill it, but its breath was so terrible that all had fled. To prevent it coming nearer, they supplied it every day with 2 sheep, but when the sheep grew scarce, a human victim had to be substituted. The victim was selected by lot, and the lot just then had fallen on the king's own daughter. No one was willing to take her place, and the maiden had gone forth dressed as a bride to meet her doom. Then St. George, coming upon the scene, attacked the dragon and transfixed it with his lance. Further, he borrowed the maiden's girdle, fastened it round the dragon's neck, and with this aid she led the monster captive into the city. It followed her as if it had been a meek beast and debonair. The people in mortal terror were about to take flight, but St. George told them to have no fear. If only they would believe and be baptized, he would slay the dragon. The king and all his subjects gladly assented. The dragon was killed, and 4 ox carts were needed to carry the carcass to a safe distance. The legend says that 15,000 men were baptized on that day, not counting women and children. The king offered St. George great treasures, but he bade them to be given to the poor instead. Before taking his leave, the good knight left behind 4 requests, that the king should maintain churches, that he should honour priests, that he should himself diligently attend religious services, and that he should show compassion to the poor. In this fable, the dragon is seen to represent Satan, and the princess represents the Christian Church. St. George rescues the pagans from evil by vanquishing it, and saves the church from being devoured by the insatiable forces of darkness. But we'd be very much mistaken if we were to think that St. George was only an English phenomenon. The cult of St. George goes back a long way, certainly to the 4th century anyway. The Syrian church held him in high esteem. There's a church of St. George in Rome. St. Clothilda in Gaul dedicated a church to him. In Venice, he's the 2nd patron after St. Mark, and the Greeks hold him in high honour. He's also the patron saint of Moscow in Russia, and of Georgia, which of course bears his name, and Aragon. Until the 18th century, he was the patron of Portugal as well. He remains to this day still in charge of the army. St. George is also the patron saint of Catalonia. In fact, the Catalonian people have their own tradition for his celebration. The legend in Catalonia is that when St. George killed the dragon, he gave the maiden a red rose. As a result, on the 23rd of April, especially in Barcelona, it's traditional for men to give their girlfriend, fiancé or wife a red rose, and the lady in question corresponds by returning a book. In Barcelona, St. George's Day is more popular than Valentine's Day. This is all quite far removed from the legend of St. George the Dragon Slayer in the Middle Ages. In fact, a legend from the 4th century comes far closer to the truth. It states that during this period, under the emperors Diocletian and Maximian, a great persecution began against the Christians. George, seeing that some were terrified into apostasy, in order to set a good example, went boldly into a public place and cried out, "All the gods of the Paynims and Gentiles are devils. My God made the heavens and is very God." Datianus, the provost, arrested him, and failing to move him by cajolery, had him strung up and beaten with clubs, and then tortured with red-hot irons. Our saviour, however, came in the night to nurse him back to health. Next, a magician was brought to prepare a potion for George with deadly poison, but the draught took no effect, and the magician, being converted, himself died a martyr. Then followed an attempt to crush the saint between 2 spiked wheels, and after that to boil him to death in a cauldron of molten lead, but without any result.
So Datianus once more had recourse to promise soft words, and George, pretending to be shaken, let them think that he was willing to offer sacrifice. All the people of the city assembled in the temple to witness the surrender of this obstinate blasphemer of the gods, but George prayed, and fire coming down from heaven destroyed the building, the idols, and the heathen priests, while the earth opened up at the same time to swallow them up. Datianus's wife, witnessing these things, was converted, but her husband ordered the saint to be decapitated, which took place without difficulty, though Datianus himself, returning from the scene, was consumed by fire from heaven. Compared to some of the other early versions of the legend of St. George, this is a comparatively mild form. But as you can see, the dragon isn't mentioned at all. Experts believe that the dragon version of the legend is based on a 5th century description of the emperor, Dragon, implying that he was cruel and fierce. There are many pre-Christian traditions of heroic dragon slayers, such as Perseus and Horus, and it's likely that these stories were influential in creating the legend of St. George as it now exists. From the writings of Metaphrastes, we can piece together that he was born in Cappadocia, modern-day Turkey, of noble Christian parents, and on the death of his father, he accompanied his mother to Palestine, her country of origin, where she'd had land and George was to run the estate. He was martyred at Lydda in Palestine, which is now Nicomedia. He held an important post in the Roman army, the rank of tribune, perhaps colonel in modern terms, during the reign of Emperor Diocletian. Diocletian was a great persecutor of Christians, and when the persecutions began, George put aside his office and complained personally to the emperor of the harshness of his decrees and the dreadful purges of Christians. For his trouble, though, he was thrown into prison and tortured. He wouldn't recant his faith, and the following day he was dragged through the streets and beheaded. It's uncertain whether he also tore down the emperor's decrees as they were posted in Nicomedia, so he was one of the first to perish. The emperor's wife, Alexandria, was so impressed at the saint's courage that she became a Christian, and so too was put to death for her trouble. Much later in the 12th century, the English crusaders would hear the French soldiers crying out to Saint-Denis for his intercession, and decided that they too should have a patron saint to call on. None of the English martyrs were seen as being warlike enough, so Richard the Lionheart chose St. George. And that's why today, more than 800 years later, St. George is the patron saint of England.
This is Burst.
You're listening to Burst Live 2004.
Stop, hold it, breathe, now!
Like what you're hearing? Contact us on studio@burst.co.uk.
Splendid and tremendous.
Spice World.
Cashback.
Out of bloody exactly.
Spice World.
This is Burst.
You're listening to Burst Live 2004.
So, patronism. Didn't you say that St. George was actually a patron saint? What?
He's a patron saint of skin diseases and syphilis as well. I didn't like to mention it in that piece, but yes, he is.
Remember that, guys.
Yeah.
If you're English, you're into syphilis. Or maybe not.
I should probably mention that that tune we just played was that was by Holst. It was from the Planet Suite, and it was called Mars, Bringer of War.
Bit of culture for you there, for all those classical...
Bods.
Boffs. So, it's summer, we're in the middle of June, and we've compiled for you today, excuse me, I've actually been afflicted by one of the summer's bringers of doom, which is hay fever, but we've compiled a summer survival guide. So, hay fever, who has hay fever?
Me.
I have.
I do.
I think a lot of people have hay fever. Yeah. I think it's one of those things that you could not have for years, and then all of a sudden you'll get it, and you'll be like, oh my God, what's wrong with
me? And it can actually kill you, because there was a hay fever remedy called Trillidan, which if you took it with pineapple juice, actually gave you a heart attack. So hay fever can be a killer.
Remember that, kids. Hay fever's a killer. I've had an absolute nightmare trying to find something, because I can't take any chemicals. I've got to take homeopathic stuff, but thank God I found something. So it's all natural stuff. I think that's the way forward, natural stuff.
Does homeopathic stuff really work?
It has done, yeah.
Didn't work for me.
Well, maybe you need chemicals.
But they are very expensive, isn't it?
Not that bad, yeah. Stuff like, can we mention this? Claritin. That's meant to be really good, but you only get 7 tablets, whereas homeopathic stuff, you get 60.
And you need any, like, doctor recipe in order to get it, or just go to any...
You can get it behind the counter at all leading pharmacies.
And there are also other brands such as Zyrtec.
Yeah, that's good. Puritan.
Yep.
The one I'm using is Pollenaya. That's a good one. Excuse me, I've just been outside.
I got to say that because I found very annoying that, I mean, back home in Venezuela, you can go to any pharmacy and buy, like... normal, not like high complex remedies, but you can buy like normal stuff without any doctor recipe. And
yeah.
Here, if you got any normal disease, you get to go to the doctor and then get the recipe. It's like very complicated. And
any
very
normal disease.
Annoying.
Here's a tip for you, actually. If you buy local honey to the area that you live in, that works, because it's the pollen, obviously, the bees use from the area, and everywhere's different, and you become immune to it.
There's not a lot of bees in Coventry City Centre, though, so it can be a bit tricky.
But you know what I mean, from the Shire.
I see what you mean. But I'm on Zyrtec, and it's very good.
Yeah?
And also, I've found that you don't have to take it once a day. It says once a day, but if you take it once every other day, it still works.
Well,
and you pay half as much.
That's from the master of cheapskate tightness, Phil. So, hay fever. By the way, if anyone has got any tips on summer survival guides, give us a call. The number is 01202 595 762 or email us at studio@burst.co.uk. So, hay fever, and then obviously the sun. We love the sun. We do.
Who doesn't? Come on.
The sun doesn't love us, though. The sun doesn't love the English.
Not the British people.
Even sometimes all like sun.
Bless us. Oh. Yeah?
Yeah. Because sometimes you could see some, if in a like a good day like today,
yeah,
they might wear a hat and raise an umbrella.
Oh.
Really?
Yes, it's true.
Does it make Asian skin burn easier, or...?
Well, it's easier to turn black, it's true. But then, if you go to Asia, it would be easy to find a lot of cosmetics. They just say, make you feel white, make your skin turn white.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a culture there.
So you know, they prefer to have paler skin?
I don't know, it's just the value of beauty. Most of the people, they like to be white, especially girls.
Really?
Yeah.
Because, people... In England, and sort of Western people tend to prefer to be browner.
Not Michael Jackson, come on.
Exactly. One point.
That makes me an English rose, then. because I've got the worst tan this year. It's so patchy. And I burnt my feet the other week. And I've got, you know, you can see where I've rubbed the cream in on my legs. You can see fingerprints on my ankles where I've rubbed the cream in. And then I burnt my feet and I couldn't walk. Couldn't go to work for a couple of days. And, and if you get sunburned, I went to the pharmacy and I was like, please help me, I'm dying. If you take aspirin, it helps your burn quicker. Heal quicker. Go down. And aloe vera gel, that's the best thing. Because pure aloe vera gel.
Aloe vera, but it's stinky.
It is, and it's a bit, leaves a bit of a residue on your skin. But hey, I'd rather have residue than...
and stinkiness rather than
pain. Oh, dear. So, summer is a time for love as well. For some people.
What's love got to do with it?
It's George... No, it wasn't George Michael.
A friend of swimming suit in Asia.
Yeah. But obviously, all you want to do in summer is party as well. So you have to watch your Faz and Faz. I can't talk today. It's the hay fever. I'll just blame it on the hay fever. Fag and booze consumption, because that seemingly is what summer's for. But if you're in the sun and you're drinking, you get drunk quicker, don't you?
That's very true. But also, if you're on strong medication like antihistamines, you can't drink.
Can you not?
No, well, you're not meant to.
Oh, I didn't know that.
But I went to a GP once because I was absolutely had to drink this one weekend. I think I was going to Glastonbury and I was on antihistamines. So I asked him if it was really true that it does that. Is it actually damaging, or is it just because doctors prefer you not to drink a lot anyway? And he said, he sort of gave me a little wink and said, nah, it's probably all right. But I mean, I'm not condoning taking strong antihistamines and drinking,
no,
obviously.
I'm not condoning taking strong antihistamines at all.
Yeah. But it hasn't killed me.
It depends on the body. Sometimes the alcohol just neutralizes the antihistamine. Sometimes it accelerates the strongness of the alcohol. So it's really up to your body, you know, and the chemical reaction inside of you.
Right. What about bites? I got bitten as well in my own back garden.
In your own back garden?
In my own back garden in Bournemouth. And the bite started to spread across my leg. Like fingers of poison were starting to go. So what I did, and this was a handy tip someone taught me, if you hold a cigarette no, it's true. Don't put the cigarette out on your skin, but if you hold a cigarette right near the burn, it deadens the inside. It sort of, you know, the heat kills the inside of whatever's making you itch.
I don't like your remedy. It's like saying if you've got a headache, chop your head off.
Well, no pain, no game. That's what I say.
Indeed.
What about all the summer activities we like to indulge in?
Camping is my favourite one.
I don't know how I feel about camping because... Oh, hi, Mum, if you're listening. Mum is going to Wales camping this weekend. Bless her.
Glamorous.
Glamorous, yes. Lives life on the edge. We used to go camping loads and... One of the things I can remember from camping is we were in Norway, the land of the midnight sun. And I obviously didn't get used to the fact that it would be so sunny at 3 o'clock in the morning. So I'd wake up, think it was 8 o'clock, get up, go to the toilet on the campsite, come back and realise actually it was 3 o'clock in the morning. And one particular night stroke day that I came back from the toilet, I heard some snuffling sounds in the tent and I was like, oh my god, what's going on? I thought it was someone snoring to start off with, and I was like, okay, no. And then I found this beast eating my half open can of spaghetti hoops, and this is what was really annoying, I didn't like beans, so they only bought one can of spaghetti hoops, and that was my can of spaghetti hoops, and there was this giant hedgehog eating my spaghetti hoops. And I'm not joking, hedgehogs in Britain are a bit piddling, aren't they, really? These were the size of, I don't know, what, a dinner plate? They were massive.
Blimey.
And do you know what I had to do? I was like going, shoo, shoo, and it wouldn't move. So I got a tennis racket, scooped it up on the tennis racket, and chucked it out the tent door.
I'm glad you didn't touch it, because they've all got nits about.
Yeah, and rabies. And then when I looked outside, there were like hundreds of them. like hobbits.
So your advice is never go out
camping
without any tennis
proper,
racket.
without any proper equipment to rid yourselves of wildlife.
Are you sure you hadn't got sunstroke and you were just sort of hallucinating these massed ranks of hedgehogs outside?
No, I swear. It was the weirdest thing. They were massive. They were absolutely massive.
Talking about camping, since Phil, you're going for camping.
That's true. I'm going to Glastonbury next week, actually, so you'll be able to listen to a live report by me next Friday, if you want. Actually, last year I went to Glastonbury. It was a bit of a nightmare because I took one of those blow-up mattresses rather than one of those camping mats. And what I didn't realise is that I'm heavy. And after I'd got on my camping... No, not the camping mat. The inflatable mattress the first night and immediately punctured it. And then spent the rest of the 3 days sleeping on effectively the ground and couldn't get any sleep at all.
Oh.
But I still had a good time because it's Glastonbury.
Yeah, you're not meant to go to bed. Really?
In general. That's true.
Festivals. Could you stay up for 3 days? Just for concert?
I don't think you could. I think you would hallucinate, definitely. Oh. You might see all sorts of things, especially at Glastonbury. I mean,
especially naked lady dances.
There's generally people in mushroom costumes and stuff dancing around anyway, so you couldn't tell whether you hallucinate or not if you're at Glastonbury. It's quite mental.
So we've got
a live report from Glastonbury next week.
Yes. Yeah.
So could Phil is an SAS expert.
Oh, yes.
He's going to give you some handy tips on how to survive summer.
Well, you say some. One. But it is quite an important
one handy tip.
All you need to know is, and it says this in the SAS Survival Guide with a little skull and crossbones next to it, it's on urine and seawater. Never drink either. Never. But both can produce drinking water if distilled, and seawater will provide you with a residue of salt, which is quite important physiologically. So there you go. You can also get water from plants and solar stills, and I'll probably stop talking now because that's about all
thinking,
I know.
I was thinking, like, worst case scenario, what would you do if you were... you'd gone camping... Yeah, you were on an island and the ferry left early...
Well, if I needed water, I could take some of my clothes off and spread them on the grass, and then in the morning they will accumulate dew, and you can wring the clothes out into your mouth. You laugh, but that might save your life.
What about food?
Food, I don't know. I'd probably start looking around for wild berries and things. If you're next to the sea, there's all sorts of seaweeds that are edible. There's, like, pretty much any crustacean is edible, unless it's brightly coloured, in which case you'd probably die.
What I'd do is capture a cat... stick £5 note to its fur and send it to the shop. But then I'd probably die because it wouldn't come back.
You didn't mention a shop. If you mentioned there's a shop.
We're talking about an island.
Oh, yeah.
Teaser.
All right, Jesus. On my island, there's a shop and it sells Cadbury's.
And a convenience store. Very convenient in this case.
Your island's Britain, isn't it?
Yeah, basically... What I've done there is I've confused a deserted island with the island I actually live on.
Which is fully populated with a large range of amenities.
Thank God.
Yes.
3 o'clock.
This is... Best. Yeah.
to Burst Live 2004.
Cashback.
It's that time you've all been waiting for, Big Brother Report. I reckon everyone is bored already of Big Brother. What do you think?
Well, we're going to have to change the report now.
I know. No, but you may as well talk about it. Yeah. Especially with all this sort of new violence that we're seeing on TV.
Well, we didn't see, really, because they cut away from it for an hour.
Which did is they?
A bit, felt a bit robbed. I mean, not that I, you know, if something interesting is going to happen on Big Brother, it seems a shame for them to not show that and then show everything else that's dull. You know what I mean?
True. I mean, what I can't understand is they've been very clever this year. They've picked all the people they've picked. They knew we're going to sort of interact in a certain way, and they knew that people would sort of, you know, get on each other's nerves, maybe have something outrageous to say. So the fact that they are being violent, are they breaking the rules?
Definitely. I mean, they're breaking the rules, but they're also breaking law, which is why the police have started to investigate the incident. I mean, I think Big Brother did expect there to be some kind of friction after the two girls who'd been sent to the bedsit came back into the house.
But Michelle and Emma, yeah.
Yeah, but maybe they didn't think it was going to be this serious.
No. I mean, to be honest, I saw sort of some of it late the other night when they were fighting, which is from 2 o'clock onwards. And I didn't realise that it was actually because they'd come back in the house, because as well, they wanted the conflict where Michelle and Emma were in the bedsit and being able to hear everyone backstabbing them, and then come back into the house and everyone go, oh my God, oh, you know, what have we said, sort of thing. So, but Victor, I don't know.
There's a picture of him in the Daily Mail, which is quite frightening. He looks like he's trying to kill someone, and he's got his face painted as a clown, which somehow makes it all the more sort of
bizarre.
It did make it.
He looks like one of the lads from Big Brothers,
or the Insane Clown Posse.
Yeah, maybe
the hip hop band
rappers. But I mean, yeah, freedom of speech and all that sort of thing. But it's quite disturbing seeing him fronting up to a girl. And yeah. I know people, you know. But it is. He can be so aggressive. It is not good TV, really.
And we also forget that he is meant to be a politics student.
Yeah,
and you wonder how he managed to get on that course if he's incapable of having a sort of sensible, reasoned argument, and he responds with to sort of a bit of provocation with some violence. Well, he didn't manage to actually do anything because Stuart held him back. In fact, Stuart was shouting, "Who are you? Who are you? You're the slick man." to try and calm him down.
Like in the film Rocky.
Yeah, it was a little bit, I don't know, American for my liking, but yeah, it just all went a bit wrong.
And the pictures in the paper today as well of all the house smashed up, the plates smashed. Absolutely crazy.
And the camera at the end of the bit actually panned over to one of the signs that had been written on the wall of the Big Brother house saying, "No more war." And it seemed a bit cheesy to do that, to be honest.
Sad ending.
It is.
Yeah.
I think people are losing it. I really do. And it makes you wonder what Big Brother's got up their sleeve to do next, or how the eviction process is going to do.
I think Jason and Victor are going to have to leave the house. I can't see them staying in.
Jason's flipped a bit.
I thought Jason was really more nice. Culpable than Victor, to be honest. He actually really did look like he was going to floor Marco.
He's turned into...
Yeah, but it's again... I mean, they... play mental tricks with those guys, and they also add alcohol. They were drinking like 1 hour before the argument, and of course if you've been drinking for 1 hour and there is some stress put into the mixture of these people being locked, it's like they will go mentally and ballistic.
And we're back to the old English drinking culture again.
Yay, hurrah.
It's like a nasty vicious circle. But yeah, it does seem very, very strange. And also, I think one of the things that wound Jason up was that he was sitting next to the girls who were quite distressed by the other girls from the bedsit coming back in. And I think that wound him up quite a lot because the girls were crying and it must have just made it harder for him to tolerate in some way. But it doesn't excuse what he did, really.
Mm. Who do you think is going to win, then?
Dan.
I think Daniel as well. I think he's wicked.
He was the only one who came out of that night with any sort of credibility, I think, because he tried to calm everyone down and he was very reasoned, and he was the only one who really didn't show himself up.
Yeah, he's the older one, though, isn't he? So, well, here's a little tune for you.
This is Blackfist.
I'd just like to do a big shout out to all our listeners. Zoe Mack, who is coming down to Bournemouth in September to do the MA course. My mum in Ashby. And Sean Street, one of our tutors. And Hugh Chignall, another one of our tutors. Hi guys, how you all doing? We're just going to talk about a course for a little while, just as though, you know, feel like we should spread the love across the world about why we're doing this, really. We've all been on the course since September, and we're finishing in September, so we've only got now 12 weeks? 13 weeks? 12 or 13 weeks. It's gone so quickly. What do you want to say about it, Phyllis?
Well, it has definitely seemed to fly by. I can't wait to do this next bit of the course, which is the final master's project. And that gives you the chance to do a half-hour radio programme of your own, which I could recommend to anyone. It's quite good fun. It's good to explore something you're really interested in and try and make something out of it, you know, and hopefully sell it to someone eventually, if that's going to be likely to happen. What about you, Francisco?
Well, I got to say that before I came here, I've never done any documentaries, so I've been just into news and into radio music, and here I have developed this approach about doing features and documentaries, which it is very interesting thing to do.
It is.
What about you, Laura?
Oh, what I like about the course is that you get chances to hear the experience from the people, from the professionalist, the industry here, which is quite a different views and different experience for me, especially for me.
If you're serious about radio, if you are completely serious about radio, it is a fantastic course, and it's not just, you know, you sort of cover all aspects of broadcasting and production, and we've met some wicked people, and touch wood, when we leave in September, we'll all go off and get fantastic jobs.
For the BBC?
Yes. Or wherever. Wherever the wind takes us. But, I mean, what would you like to do in September?
Not just
go home and drink beer.
Well, I'd like to get a job as a radio producer, but I think you have to work your way up. And eventually I want to become a freelance radio producer.
Yeah.
Where you just, it just seems like the ideal sort of job where you can find something you're interested in and then research it well and then just produce a program on it. And it just seems like a fantastic thing to do. Like, it's more of a vocation than a job, really, I would have thought.
Yeah, freelance, I mean, that would be the perfect job because you just do it whenever. It would be fantastic. I, on the other hand, would like to present. So if there's anyone out there who likes my voice. Now, presenting. Phil's giving me the stare of evil. Now, I would like to do presenting and producing. I'm really into producing dramas and stuff like that. So it's, we're all multi-skilled, I should say. Definitely. Anyone else? What do you want to do, Francisco? You're going to go back to your country and spread radio via the medium of dance.
Indeed. You couldn't say better. I think, yeah, I will, whatever I go, I will work into radio or, well, you never know where I'm going to end, but
might be a lap dancer.
Yeah, you never know with this body. You are not seeing it, but it is. What about you, Laura?
If I get any chance, I'll jump for it. No matter where, I'll probably back in my country, I guess.
Yeah.
But I think I do learn something about this course, which inspired me the most is that, how do you say, the British way of producing programs.
Yeah.
Which I like the most is that a lot of ways, you know, the balanced views of BBC.
Yeah.
And like they say, you follow the predecessors, the steps.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that.
Britain is one of the biggest and best heritage countries in the world.
And the way the attitude produced the programs.
Back to patriotism.
No, in terms of radio
anyway.
And media.
A fruitful year.
Anyway, I think we've got a song by Adam Sandler now, so sit back and enjoy.
Check it.
Woke up in the morning, put on my new plastic glove. Served some reheated Salisbury steak with a little slice of love. I got no clue what the chicken pot pie is made of. Just know everything's doing fine down here in Lunch Lady Land. Oh. Well, I wear this net on my head, 'cause my red hair is falling out. I wear these brown orthopedic shoes, 'cause I got a bad case of the gout. I know you want seconds on the corn dogs, but there's no reason to shout. Everybody gets enough food down here in Lunch Lady Land. Ah. Well, yesterday's meatloaf is today's Sloppy Joe's. And my breath reeks of tuna, and there's lots of black hairs coming out of my nose. Oh, hoagies and grinders, hoagies and grinders. Navy beans, navy beans, navy beans, navy beans. Hoagies and grinders, hoagies and grinders. Navy beans, navy beans. Meatloaf sandwich, yeah. Slobber door, slop, a slobber door, yeah. Slobber door, slop, a slobber door, home on. Slobber door, slop, a slobber door, yeah. Slobber door, slop, a slobber. Well, I drank one morning that I woke up to see all the pepperoni pizza was a-looking at me. It screamed, why do you burn me and serve me up cold? I said, I got the spatula, just do what you're told. Then the liver and onion started joining the fight, and the chocolate pudding pushed me with all its might.
and a chop suey slapped me and it kicked me in the head. It's called revenge lunch, lady, said the garlic bread. I said, oh, what did I do to make you all so mad? They said, you got flabby arms and your breath is bad. Then the green bean said, you better run and hide. But then my friend Sloppy Joe came and joined my side. He said, if it wasn't for the lunch lady, the kids wouldn't eat ya. You should be shaking her hand and saying, pleased to meet ya. She gives you a purpose and she gives you a goal. You should be kissing her feet and kissing her mole. Oh, boy. Now, all the angry fools just leave me alone and we all live together in a happy home. Thanks to Sloppy Joe, slap a Sloppy Joe, yeah. Sloppy Joe, slap a Sloppy Joe, come on. Sloppy Joe, slap a Sloppy Joe, yeah. Sloppy Joe, oh yeah. Oh, come on. Take it down now. Well, me and Sloppy Joe got married. We got 6 kids and we're doing just fine. Down in Lunch Lady Land.
This is Best.
You're listening to Burst Live 2004.
And now with the most important news from all over the world. In Europe, EU leaders are to meet for a second day after they failed to agree on the new head of the European Commission at late-night talks in Brussels. France and Germany have backed Belgian Prime Minister, but Britain believes he would be too eager to make the EU more federal. The leaders are also discussing a first-ever constitution for the expanded EU.
And in Africa, a former Rwandan mayor has been sentenced to 30 years in prison for organising the slaughter of 20,000 people during the 1994 genocide. Silvestre Gakoumoubitsi led the massacre by distributing weapons and urging ethnic Hutus to kill and rape their Tutsi neighbours. According to the official indictment, the former mayor drove around his district announcing by megaphone that Tutsi women should be raped and sexually degraded. At the end, 800,000 people were killed in 100 days in 1994.
And in other news, President George W. Bush has disputed findings by a commission investigating the 9/11 attacks that there was no link between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Bush was emphatic by saying that his administration never claimed Iraq helped coordinate the 11th September 2001 attacks, only that it had contacts with Al-Qaeda. This week, the Commission released statements on its preliminary findings on Al-Qaeda, the 9/11 plot and US defences. On Al-Qaeda, the group said it found no credible evidence that Iraq helped the militants carry out the 9/11 attacks. The comments contradicted remarks by Vice President Dick Cheney about Saddam Hussein's long-established ties with Al-Qaeda and cast doubt on one of the Bush administration's justifications for invading Iraq.
In South America, Colombia's largest left-wing rebel group, FARC, has admitted that it carried out the killings of 34 coca farmers earlier this week. Tuesday's attack in North Santander was the worst since President Alvaro Uribe took office 2 years ago. The United Nations has condemned the massacre as a war crime. In Asia, Japan has approved a plan to allow its troops in Iraq to stay and join the multinational force there once the interim government takes power. The plan has divided the nation and there are concerns that it could violate Japan's pacifist constitution. But Prime Minister Koizumi said that Japan's contingent would continue with humanitarian tasks. The move aims to provide security after the 30th of June handover of power from the US-led coalition to the Iraqi interim government. However, on joining the multinational force, the Japanese contingent will be under the overall responsibility of the US.
This is Best.
You're listening to Burst Live 2004.
Well, I think that's it for today.
Thanks to Alan for operating the equipment and looking after the technical side.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Thank you to Francisco and Phil and Laura.
Thank you to Charlie.
Thank you, Charlie. I love you. Had a wicked day. Next week, we're going to be doing a live report from Glastonbury. Phil Jones will be scouting around people's tents and nicking beer and hopefully meeting some people we can talk to, maybe.
Maybe.
We'll have more features, music and chat. And for now, we'll just play you out with another song. Hope you've enjoyed today.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
This is Best.